Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Mike Shope.
I have a thought that's probably dumb, but it's not definitely dumb, so I'm going to say it.
And the Bulldog.
Alan Hearns. Get out!
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
I was thinking about that that moment last night in Toronto. Talking about this through the day has made me more sympathetic to those fans. I mean, anybody can see why it's like mean or rude to do that. Mm-hmm. And anybody can see to a certain point why it's that way. But you tell me what this would sound like. Week four. The Bills are 3-0 or even 2-1. And New England is the same or worse. And here we are again for the what year in a row? 10th, 15th year in a row, at least, going, is this the year that the Bills can actually be better than them? Right? There have been fluke wins. There have been a couple of moments where you thought it was possible.
Right.
But hardly any in a long time.
No, you've been mostly spending off seasons chalking up two losses and figuring out how I can win 10 other games.
Which is apparently really hard.
Right.
So that's the spot. And all the years, with every one of these years that goes by, New England won the Super Bowl again. With all the years that go by, there's Belichick, there's Brady. And this is you know, we get this game every year. There's something good about that. Like, you get the chance every year to, you know, to show yourself, to beat them. It just never happens. So it's the second quarter, and the Bills are up 10-0. So far in this game, the defense has been excellent, and, you know, you're thinking, you're really confident. The crowd's on fire. And Brady drops back, and Jerry Hughes blows by his guy and just Bruce on Boomer, like you mentioned earlier. That hit, and everybody screams and cheers, and Brady fumbles, and, you know, whatever. Like, I don't want the fumble. Forget the fumble. It's a sack. It's a first down play.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens, and the crowd goes wild. Jerry Hughes gets up and starts to celebrate. The other Bills guys jump on him, and Brady does not get up.
Yeah, he's just laying there. Yeah.
He's not moving. You don't have any time to figure out what his injury is.
Mm-hmm.
What does that stadium sound like in that moment? Like, every one of these plays is a little different. And on that one, you're celebrating the sack.
Right. Right.
As a couple seconds go by, then it's the injury.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that sound like? And I'm not picking on anybody by this, because
no,
I would feel this. You know, like, I would feel this, especially if I'm someone who's been going to see these beatdowns by New England every year.
Yeah, I would not feel good. I don't feel good about what the people did in Toronto, but I understand it, and I feel like I can explain it and even defend it. But I wouldn't feel good about it, but I would expect that there would be a lot of people that would never stop cheering, or maybe there'd be a little gap, you know, because you'd cheering the play and then, like, you realize he's hurt, and maybe you take a breath to process that, and then you just start cheering again. But I think there would be cheering. He gets on the cart, there'd be cheering. I think that's what I would expect, and I'm not being pejorative in saying that, like, negatively. I'm not judging you. I think that would be the reaction. That's sports. I don't know that it's a common phenomenon. You know, I think we've gotten more anonymous here with social media, so it's a lot easier for people to have their, like, default setting be, you know, meanness or whatever. You just, because it's just how a lot of people operate. I mean, it's just how the world is now to an extent. But don't know. I think you'd get people going, yeah, I'm happy about this. And showing it outwardly. I wouldn't be one of them. I mean, I would recognize that it's advantageous for my team, but I would not feel like I should be cheering the guy getting carted off.
No, and neither would I, but I'd be standing.
But right.
And that moment would be gripping. Those moments are gripping moments. Like mm-hmm. that is also the case last night. Like what this is a huge moment in sports and in this series or this game. The Umberger hit. For me, I'm in there for that, and I'm like everybody else in there. I'm on the edge of my seat. I can remember that night very well. It was a very emotional night for me. And there's the second overtime. It happens in the first overtime, I think, right? Umberger is going left to right.
Yeah, because the Sabres Campbell scored on that net in the second overtime, yeah.
So it's overtime of game one. It's Philadelphia. He's not the most important player on the Flyers, but he is a player on the Flyers, and he comes up the ice, and Brian Campbell flattens him, and he doesn't move. What you do there, I mean, you stand up. There's a scream when it happens, and everybody stands up. And you know what else you hear after that? You hear talking, like a loud, like the din or something, like a loud talking in the crowd, because everybody is talking to each other about what they just saw. And it's not like to mock the injured player or to celebrate that he's hurt. Mm-hmm. Apparently, it's just like, wow. And people start to talk about that, and there's that certain sound that is at a sporting event. Ooh, something that kind of sounds like everybody is just buzzing, right?
Yeah, right.
Over
right.
that?
Yep.
So that's not celebrating it.
No.
But that's also not sitting there quietly, respectfully. You know, you're just, you're feeling that, and you have, like, the intuition is, for both things, like, this is good for my team. This guy, any guy coming out is good for my team.
Yeah.
No matter who he is, almost.
Yep. Yep. And I mean, you know, then a lot of that could be, you know, whatever. I didn't even see it. What happened? Was it clean? Like the whether it's clean or dirty would be a big part of that buzzing conversation now. I don't know that it was as much in 2006 because I don't think we were as far down the road as we are now. On what is okay and not okay, what is a suspendable offense and what's not in the league. I think it's evolved. And so your tastes evolve, mine as a fan evolve. You know, I'm at a point now with any hockey game, like I would recognize certainly the excitement of that hit and would cheer the hit, I think, if it happened today. But I very quickly now get to fearing for the safety of the player who's probably been concussed. Like almost every time there's a hit like that in hockey and someone's lying there like that. And that was that one was particularly dramatic. Like he tried to lift his head up and couldn't. I mean, you could see he was in real rough shape right away. And now when you know, it's mostly on TV that I see it. I can't remember the last time I saw, I saw a Sabre. I saw Pominville before he got traded away against the Blackhawks get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And that was scary. I mean, the stretcher and the immobilize, the whole thing. Like that's just a real serious situation to me. More so than someone who's obviously suffered a leg injury.
Totally.
Right? I mean, so, you know, that would be different too in this Brady scenario you're painting in week four where, you know, what is hurt? You know, did he get hit up high? Did he hit his head on the turf? There are questions you probably wouldn't know in the moment right after it, but I'd want to know answers. Because a head injury is a very different thing than blowing out your knee to me. Like, I take it very seriously. I think a lot of sports fans have come to view that as a very different sort of injury than anything else that happens. And that's a last 10 years development, I think, for most people that are experiencing it, if they're experiencing it at all.
And think of it maybe for somebody listening, hearing me lay out that Jerry Hughes scenario was very weird because, like, if you're old enough to remember the stadium when the Bills were good and, like, important, I don't say this at all condescendingly, like, your age is your age and the Bills just have not given you important games. Like, if you can remember important games in there and the feeling and all of that, then, like, that's in there. And this is just, like, so not what games are games. They're fine. They can be fun and
right,
sometimes important.
You don't even had that fever pitch in a long time, so that's a pretty foreign concept.
No, like what you might think, like, what is happening right now? What is this scenario we're talking about?
Right? The Bills are good.
You know, like maybe you've been married a long time and your wife never looks at you anymore, or your husband. I mean, like just sort of, wait, is this happening right now? Is this a move?
Yeah.
Is this happening right now? Because I think this is happening right now. We're talking about, all right, back to the other thing. We're talking about the Bills, like, becoming better than the Patriots, sort of like right there right. in one moment, right. in one game, and this moment be the, like, the moment where it turns. I mean, why not?
Yeah. I also think this is something that can, for fans, it would speak for me, but I've got other life experiences that are adding to it with what I'm experiencing with my oldest son that also alters my mindset about a lot of this stuff, I think, it just in a way that I can't do anything about. It just is how it goes. But, thinking about how I felt, someone tweeted at me or maybe us earlier today about Joe Montana in the AFC it was a playoff game. It was a title game.
Right? It was.
It was a title game. Okay, right. And Bruce knocks him out, and there's a famous photograph of Joe Montana. He's sitting up on the tree. His legs are down. He's just sitting there, and he's holding his head. He's holding his hands are on the side of his helmet. He's in obvious distress. And, I was in my 20s when that happened. And I don't remember feeling any sympathy at all for Joe Montana as an all-time great in the game or anything. I just remember going, Joe Montana's hurt.
Yeah, totally right. The same.
And now, I don't want to be flattering myself to think I've evolved to the point where if it happened to Brady, even though Brady represents much more of a pain in my rear end than Joe Montana ever was, I think if he's hurt like that, I think I'm respectful of that. It's age. We all, as you get older, can feel your mortality. It's out there. You've got, just whatever. You're just around it. You're older. Your kids are older. Everything, like, time is ticking. And someone who's still playing that you've watched their entire career, I'm more inclined to be respectful of that, even if you're killing me. Because you've done it. Wow, that's amazing. And I'm going to feel a different way about that guy now than I did in 1992. Or 93. It's not the same. I'm not the same person. I don't have the same experiences. And, I'm in my 20s and I'm young and I'm going to live forever. I'm not thinking about Joe Montana's career perhaps being over. I'm just like, whatever, get out of my way.
Those moments, though, when a great player goes down and you wonder if it's the last time, are very compelling, whether it's the Bills doing it or any other. If I'm watching New England play Denver and he goes down like that, I am standing up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching that game at home. I am on my feet looking at the TV to see what. I mean, how many times has this ever happened with Brady? He had a knee injury in 2008 that cost him that season in a game no one was watching. The Bills were at home that day. We were in here watching the Bills on TV.
Right.
Like, they played Seattle, I think. No one was watching that. And how much has he ever gotten hurt another time? Like, has he ever just left a game or, I mean, anything? So if that were to happen, he's 41 or 42.
You'd think it could be like, the end. Yeah, right.
Any sort of sign like that will bring on the conversation about his future, his mortality in the league.
Right.
And those moments, like Montana, the fact that it was him and the big game and everything, I'm glad you mentioned that because I didn't thought about that one today. That was a good example of something like that.
Yeah, it goes, it should anyway. I think, I don't know, it should maybe, whatever. It goes through your mind at a certain stage for players. I mean, Kelly wasn't even that old really when that happened to him. But I remember thinking it like that. He got carted off of that playoff game against Jacksonville, and I thought that could be the end. That could be it for him.
It
turned out it was. And that is a heavy moment. Like, I remember I did post game for that game, and I remember I think I've mentioned this to you before because you worked with John DeMurrow for a little while, and he was working with me then, and I was on the network postgame show, and he could tell that I wanted to say that could be it for Kelly, but I was reluctant to do it. I'd been on the air for like 2 years at that point. Like, I was just I wasn't comfortable like to say with authority that could be the end for this incredible player, but it needed to be said. And he, from the other side of the glass, was like coaxing me. Like, he could tell that I was struggling. He was like, and he just at one point just said in my ear, "Say it. Just say it. I know you want to say it." So I said it. I said, "I'm worried that could be it for Jim Kelly." That was pretty scary.
Was that a concussion?
Yeah.
It was? Yeah. I was not thinking that way at that time. I was at the stadium for that, and I was not thinking about his future. I was thinking about that win.
Yeah.
I remember being obsessed with the fact that the Bills had never lost a playoff game there.
Right.
And now Jacksonville, I don't even understand that that's a team.
Right. Right.
Like, why is Jacksonville a team?
The whole thing was
I'm going to lose to
weird.
A team that right? They're going to they're going to lose to a team that is just brand new. What was that, like their third year or something like that?
It was early for both they and Carolina made the championship games that year, I think. They each won at least a playoff game. I can't remember if Jacksonville lost right after that or not, but they
no Jacksonville was it the same year?
Yeah, they went to
Denver.
Yeah.
And they shocked Denver. It was a much bigger upset than the Bills upset.
And then they lost in New England.
Right, 13-3.
Yeah,
some score like that.
And I think Carolina 96. Also went.
Yep.
Yeah.
Carolina,
so,
Green Bay.
Yeah.
Here's Brian with us. Hi, Brian.
Hey guys, how you doing? This is a great topic. It's kind of hard to pinpoint my take on it. I was also at the Umberger game, and I remember vividly that my reaction, I was sitting in the first level of 300, and basically my reaction was, holy hell, what just happened? And it took a while for Umberger to get up, and the crowd did give a light whittle at the end. I guess where I'm going with this story, with my point is if it's a clean play and somebody gets hurt, I feel it's justified for the team that's cheering them on to say, okay, you know, it's legal within the rules. You just crush this guy, you know, move on to the next play. And then if he's just seriously injured, you know, let's show him our recognition and move on. I also remember a game I was at as a young kid. I'm not sure if you guys remember this, where Jim Kelly threw a pick to an Atlanta Falcons player, and he went to tackle the guy in the sideline. And I don't know if he tore the guy's ACL.
No, he broke his leg.
Broke his leg.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that crowd, they didn't clap at all. I remember that. They were just cheering Jim Kelly on the whole time that he, you know, went forward with that. But, you know, it's a tough situation. I mean, Kevin Durant last night, what I think the cheering is, and I'm not I don't have a favorite team, but I almost think that the cheering for Toronto fans was realizing, okay, we got their best player out of the game. We're not cheering his injury. We hope he's well, but we know we have a much better chance of winning this if he's not there.
Right, yeah, he posed a threat that messed with their collective confidence. We were in control of this series. We're going to win the NBA title tonight. I got a babysitter. Wait a minute. He's back and he's good again? Like, he's fine? I mean, it was, I think, unnerving to those fans. And, you know, that's no excuse, I guess. But, you know, we've been talking about it a lot today and can both understand how it happened. The Bills have mini camp this week before they go away until training camp. We'll talk to Sal about today's developments. One key player is hurt, and we'll see what it means. Stay tuned. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Welcome back. Just the man you need on this, the first day of Bills minicamp, to tell you what happened. A man who, by his column today, I believe, I am certain, knows the difference between DeAndre Wesley and Adrian Waddle, two offensive linemen on the Bills, our own Sal Capaccio. Good afternoon, Sal. How is life?
What an intro.
That was the most amazing introduction I may have ever had. And I've been on a lot of podcasts and things like that where they really pump up the guest. Thank you very much. That was a good intro. And I did have to explain to somebody who DeAndre Wesley was or is, I should say.
You're going to have to do it right now, I think, for me, if you don't mind.
He was on the Bills practice squad last year. He was claimed by the team off waivers just about 3 weeks ago. I believe he's actually on the practice squad even 2 years ago. Like they're really familiar with him, this staff is. And they claimed him off waivers right before, it was about May, around May 20th, 22nd, I think I looked it up. And, you know, he's been with them pretty much all of OTAs.
And is he maybe good?
I'm not sure about that. He hasn't really played much in the NFL.
Okay.
He's somebody I think that they've always, if they're going to go out and get him, and he was on the practice squad last year, they claimed him, they probably see enough in him that they can work with him. But I thought it is, glad you brought him up in this regard, Mike. He has strictly been pretty much a tackle in the time that I remember him in Buffalo, but now he started at and rotated at guard today with Vlad Dukas because of all the other injuries, because there are quite a bit of them.
Right, and I've got four offensive linemen here listed as not taking part at all, and then that doesn't even include guys that might have been limited or whatever. So maybe it's more a numbers thing than anything else, but it's kind of curious that his name pops up there on the first string offensive line.
Yeah, and he rotated with Vlad Dukas. I looked up and Wesley was out there, and I know Dukas was out there. Wyatt Teller played a lot at right guard. Like, they didn't have many guys to rotate at all. In fact, I went down the roster after practice, and I believe Garrett McGinn was the only healthy lineman that I didn't really see rotate in with the first or second string. That's what they're doing. That's how bad it is right now as far as injuries and how many guys have to go in, because some guys like Ty Nsekhe, like, they're limited, so they're not going to do offense against defense. They're just maybe doing positional drills,
right,
you know, with their coaches and things like that. Russell Bodine, same example. So if I count them, the only healthy guy that I really believe would be Garrett McGinn that wasn't out there for any of the 11-on-11.
And I guess you don't want to be Garrett
first
McGinn.
First or second team.
Right.
I guess you don't want to be him then.
He might have been on the third team. I didn't really notice that. I didn't track that because there's so much rotation.
All right, we'll dig in a little harder tomorrow, Sal.
Okay, thanks, I will.
It's like Roy Hobbs. They wouldn't even let him take batting practice.
Right.
The Bodine thing might be the reason why you end up with this guy on the first team as a first team guard, because maybe Spencer Long is someone they'd like to have there, but they need him to play center with the second team because Bodine can't do the teamwork, right?
Totally right. Totally right. Today was the first day I saw Spencer Long at center. Now, he may have been there in other times when we weren't out there, but for the three OTAs that we were out there, I made a note to say I only saw Spencer Long at guard. I never saw him at center because they had, obviously, Mitch Morse is their starting center. He was out. Then they had Bodine there for a little bit. Well, he's been out. They had Feliciano.
Yeah.
And Jeremiah Searles actually was getting time. Now he's out, actually.
Yeah.
So, you know, these guys, it's just been crazy how many guys have had to rotate in and out.
With Sal Capaccio on WGR, how about the bottom line on the line, if you will, Sal? At this stage, with all the new free agent acquisitions and Cody Ford in the second round, what should we expect overall? Like, are we at a point where, say, the Bills would expect to be strong up front? Is it really tough to predict how they'll be because of all the new people?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're going to really expect to be a lot better than they were last year, Mike. You know, I don't know how you want to – strong is subjective, right? I mean, are they going to be a – offensive line that's in the top half of the league? I would hope that they'd think and expect to be around there, I guess. I don't think anyone thinks they're going to be a top five or six unit, something like that. But not only did they sign a lot of guys, they signed a lot of guys with experience. You know, they're bringing in guys here who've played in this league, who've started in this league, who've played in playoffs, who have Super Bowl rings. You know, guys who are well thought of around the NFL. And, you know, they made Mitch Morse the highest paid center in the NFL. And, you know, maybe if you want to do like a little comparison with the Jeff Skinner thing there, but that, you know, you're going to have to overpay a little bit once it gets to free agency for a guy if you really want him and you need him. And they did need someone like Mitch Morse. So, you know, here he is, $11 million a year. So, yeah, I think that they think they're going to be really much more improved up front. But, you know, it's hard to get a gauge on what they're doing right now because of all the shuffling. And that's more than any position in football. those guys have to work together, be able to really find out what they can do. And then, you know, you do have to factor in what's going to happen with, A, the quarterback, and then, you know, the running backs behind him that obviously didn't have a very good year last year.
Yeah, you know, recognizing what you said about paying in free agency, like Morris being the highest paid center in the league obviously does not vault him to the top of the list as the top center in the league. It just means he had good timing, and he's a pretty good player, and like that, sometimes that's how it works. But, you know, that's still an upgrade, and I'd say, I guess they're hoping, a pretty significant one. And Forbes is thought to be a first-round talent by a lot of evaluators. It was a very popular pick with the draft Knicks. So, I mean, there's only five guys up there, and they've always been high on Dawkins. So, I don't know. Find a couple of guards that can play. And, you know, if everybody's right about Ford, maybe you can be, like, better than just middle of the league up there.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, look, John Feliciano is – he's played in this league, and he's started in this league. And Spencer Long, the same thing. You know, if those are your two guards, Quentin Spain.
Spain, right, I was going to say.
He spent 4 years in Tennessee, you know, played. And then you have Ty Nsekhe, who I think can still win the right tackle job over Cody Ford. Now, he's not doing himself any favors by not being out there right now, but that's going to be a battle once you go to camp. And if one of those guys, whoever doesn't win it, either one of them can actually play guard if you wanted to try that. So, you know, they do have options, and obviously position flexibility is something that's very important. And you can put Jeremiah Searles at the top of that list. That guy plays every spot along the line, and that is why he has a job in this league, because he can do a lot of different things. But he's out right now, and he was a guy that played center last week. He played guard last year. He played tackle last year. He was brought in as an extra offensive lineman on the end. So position flexibility is very important, and I think we're going to see guys in different spots this year throughout training camp when maybe it looks like someone's taking hold of one job and you're like, all right, but that guy's pretty good. We got to find another spot for him, and then they move him to maybe a different position.
Time for a short break. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog with Sal Capaccio continuing next here on WGR.
Talking with our Sal Capaccio. He's on the Western Hotline. His appearance is brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? First day of mandatory minicamp. Robert Foster was something that grabbed a lot of people's attention this morning. But then once you guys got out there, he was doing some work on the side, right?
Yeah, so this was, like, I would say, the kind of the angst or emotion of the day when it went to Robert Foster. The first thing out of Sean McDermott's mouth was give the injury update, and he was the first guy he mentioned. So right away, you're like, okay, Robert Foster's on the injury list. What happened here? He's been out there every single day. He said, Robert Foster, Zay Jones, you know, Jeremiah Searles, went through the list. And then when he was asked, he said he hurt his foot last week. We don't think it's anything that's going to be long-term, but he's still going through the evaluation process. Now, even that, sure, that sounds a little bit optimistic, but it's not a definite, right? You're not right. Like, oh my gosh, what are they talking about here? What could happen? So you're still kind of wondering. So you go out to the practice field, and I'm looking around, and a lot of times you see the guys that are injured, and they're working with trainers, or they're off to the side, and I finally found Robert Foster, and he was off to the side with a trainer, and he was jogging up and down the field. Basically, what he was doing, he was doing the circumference of the field, and he was jogging the sidelines and walking the end zone, if that makes sense. So it looked to me like at least he was in the mode of, okay, I'm not too worried about it at this point, to be honest with you.
Okay, good. I mean, this is another chance to ask you, as we get a day closer, a little closer to the season, what it means when a player is injured at this point.
Well, Mike, I think more than anything, it just you know, those reps that could be valuable right now to kind of get the chemistry with Josh Allen, the timing, talk to him, what you're seeing when it comes to wide receiver, stuff like that, offensive line, working together as a five-man unit. I think those things. But look. If nobody did, the Jets elected not to have a rookie minicamp. If some team elected not to have any minicamp and they just showed up for training camp, sure, I think you'd be a little behind, but you have time at training camp to sort those things out. So I wouldn't worry too much about it, but I think what it means is you're just a little bit behind on where you might be with your chemistry and your communication and getting a few of the little kinks worked out that hopefully, you know, you can get worked out within the first few days of training camp anyway.
And there's also time. I mean, the players are off. I heard John Brown on the station this morning talking with Howard and Jeremy, and he mentioned how after this camp is over, you know, in the time in between there, that he hopes that Josh Allen has room at his house for him or something is how he phrased it.
Yeah.
Which you know, I took to mean like that Allen will be hosting some guys and they'll do some work on their own, which a lot of quarterbacks in the league do do.
Does he have a big yard?
Maybe.
Would that just be outside?
I would imagine.
I don't know where Allen lives. He probably could afford a house with a big yard.
Probably. Or have access to a high school or something in his hometown, even if he's not here. I don't know.
Be funny to like just drive around your neighborhood and they're all working out in the yard.
A bunch of Bills.
The Bills.
They're working out. So there's that anyway.
I asked Mitch Morse if his... Today I asked Mitch Morse if anything changes with his offseason plan because now he kind of, you know, he has missed all this time. He's obviously got to get back into more football shape before training camp. So does that change how he goes about his 6 weeks off when he leaves? And he basically said no. Like, he didn't come out and say no or yes. But what he basically said was that, you know, everybody knows that when you get to training camp, it's got to be – no one's going to be 100 tip-top, like, ready to run at training camp and put a full day without getting tired. And there's going to be an adjustment for everybody. So he
– Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Understands that. So he's obviously got to put a little work in. He's going to put a lot of work in probably this offseason to get ready for training camp. But he said everybody knows once you get to training camp, that's a different deal. No matter what you do in the offseason, you know, you get to training camp and things get ratcheted up and you need to be ready to rock and roll. And it's going to take you a couple days to do that.
So, look, amongst the receiver group, I mean, there's a lot of names there. Obviously, all teams are carrying a lot of guys. We got maybe some idea which guys are completely safe. And then there's just the guys that are down the depth chart somewhat and somewhat of a curiosity. I guess like rookie free agent David Sills would be someone you'd want to include in this. And then there's Duke Williams. And like he's someone that is easy to forget about, I guess, because they signed him so long ago. But a real curiosity, like a standout college player that got on the wrong side of some stuff, ended up in the CFL, so he's got pro experience. Have you had, through all of these cycles here, the times you've been able to watch, but especially these ones where you could watch the whole practice, is there anything about Duke Williams that's worth telling our audience about?
Today was the I saw him make a really nice catch today during one of the team 11-on-11. It was with Matt Barkley at quarterback. He was kind of running from one side of the formation across the middle to the other. He caught it. Really nice outstretched catch before he went out of bounds. That's kind of the first time he's flashed it all to me. Now, that's not to say that he's been a disappointment. He's just not getting opportunity. So, therefore, I would say that, you know, he's got a lot of work to do. He's buried on the depth chart to me right now. But I would say of all the positions on the team, Bulldog, the thing I've noticed for the three OTAs, minicamps, whatever now that Sean McDermott has run, and even going into training camp for the first two he's been here, that is a position, wide receiver, that there is just a whole lot of shuffling. And guys just, you can't really gauge who's where, and everybody moves up and down the depth chart. I think about where Robert Foster was this time of year last year,
right,
and then where he obviously wound up. And then he gets waived, then he comes back, and things like that. And there's so many guys. Then there's all these injuries on top of it. So I would say Duke Williams and David Sills, I've made a point to kind of watch their reps, and they don't get many reps. Now, today, because of injuries, they were out there a little bit more. They weren't with the first team generally, but they were out there a little bit more. And I would say David Sills started to get his reps a little amped up more than Duke Williams would. But I'm not going to read anything into it because every year this happens to me. Every year I think to myself, ooh, this guy's getting good reps or not as good reps, and then we get to training camp and everything changes at wide receiver because it's just for some reason that's just a position they just put everybody in a jar and shuffle it up as much as possible.
It's tough for those guys. They lose on ties if they go through the whole preseason, and even if they produce in the preseason, they're going to lose on ties. The Bills have invested in two guys in free agency that it would look ridiculous if they weren't on the team somehow, unless it was an injury. You've got Foster, who emerged last year. Like, what do they think of that? What's that worth? And Zay Jones, who was a second-round pick going into year three, off a big bump in production, and the targets were really there and touchdowns. So one of those guys, maybe, right, Sal? Like, it's just hard because there's just so little invested in them. What would they have to do to actually beat any of those guys out? I think there's almost no chance of that. And then it's just fitting in underneath that,
right,
if there's any room.
Two spots, maybe. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and you have to count, you know, the guys who are really getting the beneficiary of some of these injuries, I think more than anyone, has been Ray McLeod and Andre Roberts. Andre Roberts is on the field all the time, it seems like. And when he was signed, you know, he's mainly been a return man, but he has played receiver in this league, and he's put up some decent numbers early in his career. And he said, when he was signed at his press conference, he said, I want to continue to play wide receiver. I know I can play wide receiver, and I'm going to push for a job. And I'll tell you, with the injuries they've had, whether it be, you know, Zay Jones being out or Robert Foster today, and both of them, he's been on the field a lot this entire offseason. And then Ray McLeod is someone, you know, I've mentioned him to you the last couple of weeks. He's still getting a lot of work. And even today, he was on the field a lot. Isaiah McKenzie is as well. And they seem to be both in there a lot. But I've noticed Ray a lot. And I think he's going to be pushing for that another slot job. You know, if they're going to keep somebody behind Cole Beasley in the slot strictly for that guy, I think Ray has a shot there. And also, obviously, he can be a return man.
And all three of those guys also outrank the other two guys. Williams,
right,
and Sills. They've all, right, played in the league.
Correct.
McKenzie, you know, this is how I operate. McKenzie started for me in the fantasy playoffs in that Detroit game last year. It was going great until he got hurt, but I lost. I want to talk about Dawson Knox, but maybe that will be tomorrow because we're almost out of time for today. I'd like to know what you thought of how the Durant thing unfolded and how the fans, you know, reacted like they did and what's been said about that.
Yeah, I think that the immediate reaction to anybody when a star is out is, as any fan would be, wow, we get to play that team without the guy, right? No matter what setting you're in. You know, obviously, if we find out today that the Bills are going to, if Tom Brady is not going to be available to them, yeah, wow, that could be two wins for the team. Who knows? But here's the thing. I don't think, not necessarily with you guys, or I've heard a lot of talk about this. I think there has to be some nuance involved here of the difference between being happy that a player is not playing against you because you have opportunity to win versus literally being in the moment and seeing a player on the ground and cheering for that injury. And I've never understood how anybody could do that in any sport at any level. If these are athletes, they're competing at the highest of levels. They are human beings, and you know, they go down. That's a tough deal to see something like that. I don't like watching it. I've always hated watching that. I've seen plenty of really bad injuries in my life, both, you know, to players on my team, guys I've coached, anything like that, or the opposing team. And in the moment someone goes down, it's immediate to me, oh, my God, like, wow, that sucks. But sure, if you're going to tell me the Bills can play games without every other starting quarterback yeah, why wouldn't you take that? Of course you would take that, and you'd be happy the guy wasn't playing. But it's just got to be a little nuance there. And I think it was wrong for anybody to cheer Kevin Durant being on the ground last night. And the minute it happens, as soon as he falls even, I don't get it. I don't get cheering that. Maybe if you thought there was a turnover, but who knows? I don't know what these people were thinking. Yeah, he got turned over. Yeah. And then we say, oh, look at that guy cheering. But when he's on the ground for a little while and he grabs something, the cheering should just stop. That is it. You should not be doing that. And I don't like it.
It's when he gets up and starts to walk, and you see that he's struggling, is when you hear the crowd like go to the next level on that.
Yeah.
So that's what it was about.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the closer you get to players who you've watched pay a price, and you're around pro athletes, and you've coached even at the high school level, I think about knowing what my son has done, like even at just the low level he is still at, comparatively speaking, to all of this. It changes your perspective on it for sure, because you know the amount of work that has gone in, and like you can put yourself very easily in that person's, the injured player's shoes, his friends, his teammates, his family, like everyone who's been around supporting that effort. So for me, like I don't even think I'm objective about it anymore, largely, but I still forgive a fan in the cauldron of the moment. He's the bad guy. He's not a real person to those fans. He's the bad guy on the other team, and I don't like you, and you're hurt now, and I'm going to take some pleasure in that. I think in the moments after that, and I think that even happened last night. I mean, it took some urging from the Toronto players, but the crowd largely turned around and was applauding Durant towards the end of his exit from the stage. And I think in the heat of the moment, I don't know. I'm not hardcore on you're the worst person ever or something. If you're excited about it, I think if you're still excited about it now, like I'm glad he's hurt, not which is different than I'm glad I don't have to face him, and that maybe right. is tough to separate. But like, I would never be glad someone tore their Achilles like a day later. I'm gonna feel bad for the guy.
I think to me it's the difference is what's done is done. Like if it happens and you're like, hey, he's not going to play, I'm happy my team doesn't have
right,
to face him.
Right.
But in the moment when you see a guy get hurt, you feel you're there, you see it. I mean, to cheer something like that, I don't know. I've never got it. And I'll tell you, I do think there are fans in every city. There's been a lot of talk of, well, we would never do that here.
Totally.
There's fans in every city that would do something like that. 100%. We know that.
Yeah.
And there's also many, many fans in every city that say, no way, man, that's awful. I don't want to see something like that.
Thank you, Sal.
You're welcome.
Sal's Yankees beat the Mets today in the first of a doubleheader. Looked like batting practice a little bit. 12-5. They'll play again tonight because, you know, two gates.
Right. Right. Yeah, they got rained out yesterday, right?
Yep.
Sal's appearance there, by the way, once again, sponsored by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Thanks for listening today. If they'll have us back tomorrow, we'll be here 3 o'clock. Sneaky Joe has the nightcap next. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, 3-7 weekdays here on WGR.
Starts the same old thing again. And tomorrow starts the same old thing again.
Gentlemen, be free.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.